This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, it's Overdrive, TSN 1050, and the TSN Go app. Bob Weeks, TSN golf analyst, a half an hour from now, so we'll begin to tee up the PGA Championship, and we'll talk about the impending, and these aren't minor changes, but the impending changes to the PGA Tour schedule, which are set to take effect in 2019, the PGA Championship, which is played in August, and will be this weekend, this coming weekend. It's going to move to May, so it'll become effectively the second major contested each year as opposed to the fourth and final. The Players' Championship, typically held in May, will move back to March. Is there benefit here for the Canadian Open? Is there not? How are they going to fit everything in a more condensed schedule? Bob Weeks will be along to answer those questions. Jesse Barfield in a couple of minutes here, former two-time Gold Glover, Blue Jays outfielder from the 80s, and a pretty consistent tweeter, and somebody who tweeted his support of Marcus Stroman this weekend. So we'll talk about Stroman and Jose Bautista's decline and a bunch of other things, how a player gets through the final 2 months on a losing team. Bunch of stuff. The Jays have made another roster move, though, Dave. Did you see? Do we have a drumbeat or something? This is breaking news. This is big. Lionel Campos, who is this year's Chad Jenkins, right? Which means burning tread on the QEW between Toronto and Buffalo every other week, has been recalled. And that's because Cesar Valdez, who got lit like a Christmas tree by the Astros, has been placed on the 10-day DL with a right shoulder impingement. Now, I don't know whether he's got a right shoulder impingement or not. I'm assuming he does. The league cares about teams faking injury. But let's be honest. I don't think John Gibbons is losing sleep that TBD is now tomorrow night's starter and not Cesar Valdez.
No. 32 years old, Cesar Valdez, a 7.63 ERA in 11 games this season in the big leagues. Not exactly the guy you're hankering to get up there on the mound.
This is what happens in a lost season. Oh. Guys go down with little itty-bitty injuries here and there. We don't know who's starting tomorrow night or a few nights down the road, depending on when that spot in the rotation was going to come up. Like, it's just, you and I, it's funny. We've been on the air for more than an hour. We've talked a little bit about the Blue Jays.
Yep.
We're doing it again. And right now is the first time, Dave, I'm going to mention that the New York Yankees are in town. We haven't talked about the fact that the Yankees, wild card holders right now, are in town for an August series. This is a series that back in March, you probably would have circled on your calendar and said, that's going to be important. It's early to mid-March. The Yankees are coming in. They're always a problem. They never fall right out of it. This was probably going to be a series of consequence. Turns out it is for the Yankees, but not for the Jays.
Yeah, if you were one of those people that strategically was buying tickets for meaningful baseball in meaningful moments of the season, this would have been a series you would have bought in advance, right? You would have said, hey, Yankees in town, early to mid-August. It's got to mean something. It's going to be good. It's going to be important. If you were looking at the schedule back in the wintertime, thinking about where you wanted to spend your Blue Jays dollars this year. And sadly, it's not working out
that way. The strange thing is, Dave, the Jays have made the playoffs in each of the last 2 years, but in the back of my mind, it may as well have been a decade of success. Like, things turned so quickly, but the expectations for this team from late July of 2015, so a little more than 2 years ago now, onward, have changed so significantly that to just be back in this place that we were in 3-4 years ago. And maybe it feels longer because when Alex Anthopoulos went all in offseason 12 into 13,
there was a lot of buzz.
The Marlins and Mets deals, there was a lot of buzz. So really since the uniforms changed back to the old nostalgia ones from the 80s, I know they're a little bit different, but essentially they took us back to the past, the vibe has been different. The level of interest has been different. They sold a lot of tickets for 2013, even though that team fell flat on its face.
Yes.
They've been to the playoffs the last couple of years. You could have even in 2014 convinced yourself, because they were slightly over 500, that they had a shot if they had a really good September.
Yep.
I don't think anybody thought it was realistic, and obviously it didn't turn out to be. But there's always been something in the last 4 or 5 years to look at with this team. Now, we're talking about guys in decline, franchise legends really playing out the string. We're talking about one starting pitcher, their best by a mile, their best starting pitcher's comportment on the mound.
Yeah.
This is what we've been reduced to on August the 8th.
It's ugly stuff. It's a familiar feeling for those of us who lived through those 22 years in the non-playoff wilderness, where there were very few summers where the Blue Jays were actually playing meaningful baseball at this point in the season, right? Like, this was just status quo for so many years when the Blue Jays were afterthoughts in the American League East. So in some ways, it feels like just like old times in a lot of ways, but it's not a good feeling if you got excited about this team, if you got caught up in that incredible, you know, absolute buzzsaw of a team that brought people back into baseball in droves in this town. To see it like this, it's depressing, and it's a little bit shocking, actually. It's a shock to the system to see how quickly it can all evaporate.
Right. And I'll still come back to this one point. Jesse Barfield is here, so we'll bring him on in just a second. For as much as it's been about the decline of Bautista, the decline of Tulowitzki, who's now injured and may not return this year, it really does hinge on the starting pitching.
Yeah.
Every night last year, they had a healthy starting pitcher who performed at or above expectations. And Drew Hutchison, before the trade with Pittsburgh, would drop in every now and then to make a spot start. But that was on a selected date
so
that they could give each starter, in a period where you didn't have an off day, an extra day of rest just to keep everybody fresh. This year, it's been Marcus Stroman every fifth day. Excellent. And everybody else has been hurt. And when they haven't been hurt, they've performed below expectations.
Yeah.
You can't go from five good to great starting pitchers to one great starting pitcher and expect to have the same type of season. Jesse Barfield, good enough to take some time to join us. I think we find him in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. Jesse, what has you out there?
The Blue Jays. We got some super camps going on, working with the kids, going all over Canada and having a blast.
How often do you jump in for those? Are you kind of one a year, a couple a year? How does that work?
Well, probably about once, twice a month.
Hmm. Good stuff. And so you're out in Charlottetown enjoying a part of Canada I haven't seen. Listen, you tweeted this weekend in support of Marcus Stroman, and Roberto Alomar has done the same. Other former Blue Jays have chimed in. This guy on the mound this year has been excellent. He has also had his share of controversy, the degree to which he's caused it versus it being a reaction by other teams or other players, I guess, is a matter of debate. But I guess I'll start with this. What prompted you, Jesse, to tweet that to Marcus?
Well, first of all, I have an uncle that played in the old Negro Leagues. And we used to sit and talk about Jackie Robinson and things that they went through. And I remember sitting down listening to him talk about this and how guys that were demonstrative. And I remember when Branch Rickey made the comment, he said, "Go get me Jackie Robinson." And he was told, "Well, you sure you want to do that?" I mean, this guy was court-martialed because he didn't want to sit in the back of the bus. He was different. So that's why I wanted. Turned out to be a great move. He had guts. He had guts to make the right move. And when I think about Marcus in the WBC, I think about the people that thought, why is he even here? you look at the numbers, they were okay the following year. It wasn't about numbers. It was about him going out representing his country. A lot of players turned it down and doing the best he could. And I'll tell you what, you look at what he did, an MVP. I knew he was going to go into this season very strong and do a great job, and he carried it into the season. And for him to receive the type of criticism after that is unwarranted. And I tweeted that simply because the photo I put with it, I remember the play at first base in Baltimore. I thought I beat it, and the umpire said out. I jumped up with a smile on my face, and the umpire said out. I read the article or look at the at the bottom of it, said he's angry. When have you ever seen me angry? Come on.
Yeah. Fair point, Jesse. I mean, is there, when you look at a guy like Stroman, and, you know, if you were a veteran player, there are people around that club who say Mark Burley, the veteran pitcher, was very good for Marcus Stroman because he could put an arm around him and say, love your energy, love that you bring it every day, but maybe now and then you got to dial it back. Do you think that's important that he have that kind of veteran guidance as a young, effervescent player?
Well, let me put it this way. Even if it was anger, as long as you keep your cool and things don't go out of whack, you're fine. Yes, it's good to have mentors around you. Yes, it's good to have older players. Marcus is wise beyond his age. He's not a dumb kid. I think the fact that you talk about hitters, the hitters are the ones that are upset at him.
Yeah, exactly.
In the regular season, you're going to have 600 plate appearances, basically. 200, they're gone. Pitch is going to kick your butt. I don't care how good you are. Basically, 400 are gone. You got 200 of those at bats left to do what you need to do with them, because you're going to mess up 200 times doing stupid stuff, looking for pitches you shouldn't be looking for. So the panic sets in on the hitters. There's a certain code you have to follow. You have to play it by the book. Don't show me up out there. Listen, have some fun. If the pitcher's getting to you to the point where you can't concentrate, don't throw me changeups when you should throw me fastballs. Challenge somebody, meet. Come on, he's got you beat already. I remember when I was with the Yankees and one guy was complaining about a pitcher throwing changeups all the time and fastball counts. And Roberto Kelly looked over at me and he laughed and go, why should he throw him the fastball? He can't hit the changeup. He crazy. And I tell you, it made perfect sense. The more you complain, the more he's going to do it. So I think what Mike Marcus is doing is fine. I wouldn't change a thing.
So you think he's actually being effective in getting into guys' heads as he is right now, and you wouldn't change anything. That's interesting. So does he remind you of anybody you played with?
Why would I change?
Well, there are people that say he should dial it back nowadays, now and then.
Let me ask you this question, Jesse. The notion of the quick pitch, as you understand it, I don't know how many pitchers you faced who would vary their deliveries such that you would feel like you were being quick pitched at any point. But what is kind of the defined, if there is one, unwritten rule in baseball? Or is there one at all?
Well, most hitters are rhythm hitters. They like to get some negative movement back to go forward. Some pitchers are not going to allow that to happen due to the slide step, trying to prevent runners from walking into second base. And if that's the case, then that hitter needs to make some adjustments. I had to do it, and I did. Now, if the guy's already in motion and that happens, then he doesn't pause a certain amount of time, that's a balk. hitters need to make sure they understand that the game's played at a certain pace. The pitcher's out there, he's controlling that pace. If he works too fast, call timeout. You have that right. Just make sure that the umpire gives it to you.
Does he remind anybody you competed against or played with, Jesse?
Mark Fitterich.
In what way?
Doesn't talk to the, he doesn't talk to the mound. I hadn't seen that yet. I loved it. I mean, honestly, I did. I couldn't wait to meet Mark Fitterich. Bring some color to the game, man. I think it's awesome.
With Jesse Barfield, who's joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline, we're talking Marcus Stroman and a variety of other things. I mean, Dave Steeb, and this was different, Jesse. I understand, and Steve would sometimes very clearly show his frustration with his teammates. That is not what Marcus Stroman does, so I'm being very clear about that. But I'm interested in how you and your teammates dealt with Steve's sometimes outward lack of appreciation if a ball went through somebody's legs, or did that ever cause trouble?
I'm laughing because it never happened to me. Because,
well, you're an outfielder, and you were a hell of an outfielder. Well, maybe that helped.
I saw it happen to some people, and you know, I thought it was amusing to me. But if that happens, that's going to be handled in the clubhouse. And we had some guys that handled it in the clubhouse. Now, he never did that to me personally. And if he did, I would handle it in the clubhouse. Simple as that. But I played the game hard. I can only speak for myself. I played the game hard. I never had a pitcher show me up. And if a guy did something that he wasn't supposed to do, I've had pitchers come up to me and ask me, you want me to get this guy? You want me to drill him? That's the way the game should be played.
Jesse, when you watch this season play out for the Blue Jays, you know, you're into mid-August. The Yankees are in town, and yet it's not the meaningful series we hoped it would be, given the Blue Jays' place in the standings. You know, what do you take out of a season such as this if you're a Blue Jays fan?
A strong finish. You really do need that. I know it's been a very disappointing year for everybody. It's been some ups also. You look at what Justin Smoak has done. You look at the way Marcus has held it together and a few other bright spots as well. But, you know, I know they say, well, Edwin is not here. Well, if Edwin was here, then, you know, Smokey wouldn't have gotten a shot maybe. I don't know. You just never know how things would have turned out. But it is what it is. The bottom line is they need to try to finish as strong as possible and take that into next season. And wherever the chips fall, then they fall. But they're going to play hard. I know that for a fact. They're going to do everything they can to salvage some of this season and play as hard as they can and do what they can do. I remember the Yankees dismantled last year, and those kids never gave up. And the next thing you know, they're still in the hunt until the end. Is that going to happen here? I don't know. Probably not. Are they out of it? Mathematically, no. But I know one thing, as a professional ball player, you're not going to give up until you're mathematically eliminated. That's why you put the uniform on. So they have work to do. They have a lot of work to do. And the good thing about it, you look at their system, we have some troops coming. We have a good farm system right now.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that hasn't been talked about much. Just the assumption of all the players traded out over the last few years as Alex Anthopoulos in particular built this team to what it would become. I think the Jays now have a top 10 farm system, again, in baseball. Mm-hmm. And it's just that there aren't a lot of guys knocking at the door yet, but some big names probably by 2019, 2020 for sure. Jesse, with Jose Bautista, it's been a tough year. He had a very strong May, but April and since June 1st have been real difficult for him, and there's been a lot of talk about how this really is the end. He's got a mutual option that surely the Blue Jays won't pick up. Buster Olney was on our morning show this morning and suggested it may be hard for Jose even to find a minor league deal this coming off season. I'm interested in your thoughts on the decline of a player, because all athletes go through it at some point. Father time, as we are wont to say, is undefeated. How difficult is it to come to grips with that, and how difficult is it to go through it as you continue to play? Do you have to get real with yourself?
Yeah. For me, it was injury related. I was trying to make the Astros team with a banged up wrist, a broken thumb, a pulled quad, hamstring was tight. In a partridge in a pear tree. So mine was injury related. So, and I'm out in right field, beautiful day in Kissimmee, and I'm looking at the scoreboard. I remember just looking back, and the next thing you know, I look back at the scoreboard, and it's the eighth inning. And it scared me because my concentration was not there. I have not seen Jose. I haven't seen him lose focus yet. So for me, it was losing focus. The concentration was not there the way it was. I never had a problem concentrating, even in tight situations. I mean, I welcome that. But for me, it was the fact that I wasn't enjoying it anymore. I couldn't perform at the high level anymore. And I know Jose set the bar so high for himself that when you fall off like that, it's very tough for people to look at you the same way. So unless he has a miraculous finish, it's going to be very tough for us to see him in a Blue Jays uniform. And that's going to be a shame because I like him.
Yeah, he'll certainly be up in the level of excellence one day, no question about it. Thanks for taking some time, Jesse. A really fascinating conversation. I hope we can catch up again soon.
Thank you. Take care.
You bet. Jesse Barfield joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are on now with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca.
Interesting stuff from Jesse.
Yeah, I think it's just got to be so difficult when you have set the bar so high. You set a high bar for yourself. The one thing I'll give Jose Bautista, and this goes back even, Dave, to the pipe bomb day, spring training 2016. I won't tell you the years or the number, but I've made it very clear what I'm worth. And here's the price of Rogers' stock. And here's what last season, the 2015 playoff run, did for the company. And da-da-da-da-da when he laid it all out. He sets a high bar for himself, too, in terms of performance. Not just because he's achieved high, but because he expects a lot of himself. One of the things he was saying, I think, if you interpret it this way, when he talked about, I will be the guy who defies the decline of my late 30s, isn't just, well, because I'm eating properly and all this. I expect that of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I expect me to be the me that I know I've been for the last 4, 5, 6 years. And the reality is, you can want it, you can work for it, but there are no promises, and more than likely, time erodes, as we know, you're never going to be that guy, and sadly, we're seeing it play out.
We're seeing it play out, but it's come so fast. You know, 2015, he's still really good, and a year and a bit later, he's just fallen off the cliff to his numbers being below average for a replacement player in the major leagues. That's just, you know, that's off the cliff. Going back to 2011, he was, you know, third in MVP voting. He had this 1,000 OPS, which is, of course, on base plus slugging. Right now he's at 700, which is just, it's pathetic for a guy who purports to be a power hitter, is what it is. He's on pace for career high in strikeouts, Scotty. It's for a guy who had that high an opinion of himself, had the work ethic, showed he figured something out about hitting it. To me, it's shocking. I didn't expect it to happen this fast for this guy. And bottom line is, he's been out there every day. We've seen all he's got, and it's just not enough anymore.
All right, coming up on the other side, Bob Weeks, TSN golf analyst, will join us. So the PGA Championship from Quail Hollow goes this weekend. It is the fourth and final golf major of the year. You already knew that. But there will be a time very soon, 2019, when the PGA Championship becomes the second of the four majors contested. So we'll tee up the tournament, and we'll discuss the impending schedule changes to the PGA Tour, which will really condense things. We'll get into things like the effect on the Canadian Open and a bunch else. So Bob Weeks is our guest next. Stay with us. This is Overdrive with Scott MacArthur and Dave Festchuk, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. TSN golf analyst Bob Weeks to join us in a couple of minutes here. And this is Overdrive with Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, TSN 1050, the TSN Go app. Some breaking news in the last 20 minutes or so. And this, of course, ties in with the Maple Leafs family, Dave. Eddie Olczyk, who we know well from NBC hockey broadcasts, former head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, played with the Maple Leafs on that great Olczyk-Osborne and Lehman line in the late 80s, early 90s, after he was acquired in the trade for Rick Vive, 50 years old, and has announced that he's suffering from colon cancer and is being treated.
Yeah. Sad news.
I mean, I don't...
Let's hope for the best here, and our thoughts and prayers with Eddie O.
No question. I don't know what more there is to add to it, other than when I hear names like this, I immediately go back to my youth. And Eddie O, with that flank of Lehman and Osborne, there wasn't a lot to cheer about in those days if you were a Maple Leafs fan. And I'm going back to when I was 9, 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
That was a line, though. Those Leafs teams scored. They gave up more than they scored, but they scored a lot of goals. And that line was responsible for a lot of it.
You know, scored 42 goals as a 21-year-old with the Leafs back in 87, 88. They lost in the first round of the Red Wings, but that was a fun team.
Gary Lehman, I think, had a 50-goal season with Olczyk as a centerman at some point.
Yes, that is correct.
So, anyway, Eddie is 50 years old, so still a very young man suffering from colon cancer, and our thoughts and prayers, as Dave eloquently put, go out to him. Big news in the golf world, and it isn't just that the fourth and final major championship will be contended this weekend at Quail Hollow. It's that the PGA Tour is going to upend its schedule in time for 2019. So the PGA Championship, usually contested in August, is going to be contended in May. And the Players' Championship, usually contended in May, is going to flip back to March. What's good about this? What's not so good about this? Does it benefit the Canadian Open? Is it a problem for the Canadian Open? What other tournaments will be affected? Well, we don't have the answers to those questions, but we expect this man does. Bob Weeks is TSN's golf analyst. He joins us now, and our insider is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Test drive the superior performance of a Subaru today. Bob, did this report surprise you? Had you heard rumblings about this? What do you make of it?
No, it wasn't really a surprise. We'd heard a lot of news about it, rumors about it for a while. We knew it was going to come at some point. I got tipped off a little earlier last week that it was going to happen today. It's sort of the first step in, first big step in what we expect will be a bunch of dominoes falling. It makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways, and there's a number of reasons why the PGA was happy with it. They, you know, every 4 years they're going to get bumped around because of the Olympics. So this moves them into a May into their own time slot. It takes them away from being the fourth of four majors, puts them into the second rotation, which gives it maybe a little bit more oomph. And I think it for most of the players, they're really happy about the fact that the PGA Tour season is now going to have an ending before Labor Day. And for the tour, it also means not going up against NFL football. So there's a lot of reasons to like this. There's still a bunch of dominoes to fall in terms of when the players move to March, which tournament is it going to take? Place of, and then who's going to move around, and we don't really know any of those answers, and they weren't exactly given them out today at the press conference.
Yeah, as you say, Bob, we don't know the answers, but if we want to start speculating, I mean, how do you think this could affect our beloved RBC Canadian Open, which has been jammed in a tough spot between the British Open, WGC, and the PGA, and it was having a has been having a tough time attracting the kind of field they'd ultimately like to attract.
Yeah, it, you know what, Dave? It's still going to be in a tough spot short term. Even when this moves around in 2019, you're going to have the Open Championship, the Canadian Open, and then the FedEx Cup playoffs. So you're kind of stuck. But let's put it this way. RBC spends a lot of money with the PGA Tour. They don't only sponsor the Canadian Open, but also the Heritage.
Mm-hmm.
So they have some leverage, and they've been using that. They've been fighting hard. I spoke to some people at RBC today, and they say they've been, you know, having some ongoing conversations with the Tour. And I suspect that they'll see some relief, but I don't know how quickly that'll happen or how whether that'll happen 2019 or it'll may take a little bit longer for it to go on. But it's a healthy tournament. And as I say, they've got lots of leverage, RBC. So I would be surprised if they didn't find some new spot. But, you know, everybody wants a new spot. And the Canadian Open is hampered a little bit because you can really only move from, say, the middle of June till the end of August to make sure you have some decent weather. So I think there's going to be a lot of stuff that has to happen for RBC to get and the Canadian Open to get a better spot.
Considering that 2.5 or so month period, Bob, is there an identifiable spot on the calendar right now that you see that you say, geez, you know, that would be the weekend for the Canadian Open if it were to get moved?
If you could put it in the middle between the U.S. Open and the British Open, which is basically where the Quicken Loans tournament that's in D.C. right now, that would be pretty much ideal. You get it 2 weeks away from a U.S. Open, 2 weeks away from a British Open. That's about as good as you can get in the summer. It would sort of fall like the 1st of July week, kind of in there. And there is some rumors that, well, not rumors, there's some, you know, Quicken Loans has announced that it's not going to sponsor that tournament too far going forward. So, you know, that's the optimistic side that you could look for and say, ah, here's an ideal spot. We can use this spot. But I don't know outside of that, you know, if you're in the summer, you're either before a major or after a major. You just don't want to be right after it or right before it like they are now.
Bob Weeks is with us on Overdrive. He's TSN's golf analyst, the co-host of Golf Talk Canada. And you're listening to TSN 1050, streaming us on the TSN Go app. How does this affect this move to May, the PGA Championship, Bob? And I guess one of the things I'm thinking of is there will be locations that have hosted this tournament in the past in August, to pick up on your weather conversation, that may come more into question because it's like mid-May now. Like maybe the weather hasn't turned or maybe it's spring and rainy. How many courses could be affected as a result of this move?
They've already said that that the courses in Minnesota and Wisconsin, Hazeltine and Whistling Straits will probably not be getting any more PGA championships. So that's an indication right there that the weather is going to be an issue. And the first time that they run this in May, it'll be 2019, they're going to have it at Bethpage, which is, you know, just in New York. So you can get some cool days in May in New York. You know, there's the agronomy and things like that are a lot better now, so you won't have to worry too much unless you get a really freaky spring about bad conditions if you're in the north. But, you know, if you look at they've got the next, I think, 8 sites already sort of locked in. And probably 6 of those are what I would call areas where you might have some pretty chilly temps, like Northern California and San Francisco, which is, that could be cold in the middle of summer. So there's some dicey ones, but I don't think there'll be anything too hard to worry about. The one thing it does do now is it opens up some southern spots in August in August. Florida courses, Texas courses now that you could bring into play. So for every course that you lose, there's probably one that you gain where you can have a championship.
So, Bob, we're looking at Quail Hollow this week for the PGA. Who do you see as the favorite coming into the fourth major of the summertime here?
I would think that Jordan Spieth is probably the betting favorite, but I wouldn't look past any of the obvious suspects. Rory McIlroy put together 4 good rounds last week at the World Golf Championship event. Dustin Johnson, if he can get some putting going, I think he could be a contender. So, you know, it's the likely suspects. But there's a few other guys, I think, that are kind of bubbling under a little bit. Charlie Hoffman, who was runner-up at the Canadian Open a couple of weeks ago, has been on a pretty good run of late. I think Adam Hadwin played really well last week. He came off 3 missed cuts, so he needed a good finish. But he seems pretty confident right now as well. it's a course that's going to set up for long bombers, and it's going to be even longer than normal just because of the weather we're having. It's been like raining nonstop since we got here. In fact, right now it's not raining, which is a miracle. But I think tomorrow is not supposed to rain, but the next 4 days they got thunder and lightning and rain in the forecast. So, you know, I think the big hitters will be favored here for sure. And that brings in the guys like Brooks Koepka, who won the U.S. Open, maybe Tony Finau, who's been playing well. So, but you're going to have to hit it off the tee, I think, to get it around here.
Bob, this, I'm kind of taking you down a track here now that's going to require you to compare eras, which is always difficult. So, quick answer to this question, then we'll follow it up. Who, in your opinion, is the best male golfer in history?
Jack Nicklaus.
Okay, so you put Jack ahead of Tiger. Do you put Tiger 2?
Yeah, I would put Tiger number 2 for sure. I think a lot of ways you just measure it on major championships, right? And I think, those eras, as you say, are tough to compare. Both guys just simply dominated their eras.
Okay,
are you going somewhere else with this?
Yes, okay. No, I am. Yeah, it was a bit of a long road to get. But I'm interested then in where Jordan Spieth fits into all of this, considering what he has achieved at this point in his career at his age. Because he is going for the Grand Slam this weekend, and that's something Tiger Woods hadn't accomplished by age 23, 24. It's something Jack, or what Spieth has accomplished now, 3 of the 4, it's something Jack had at this age. Like, where does he fit in terms of guys 23, 24? It's a real difficult, as I said and acknowledge, a real difficult comparison, but it just feels like there isn't a ton of buzz around a guy who's had an epic, almost literal epic start to his career.
I'd agree with that, and I think if you look at what he has done, even outside the majors, consistency, it's been pretty good. He's missed 17 cuts compared to Tiger, who'd only missed 2 at this point. But still, I think, you know, the depth of talent right now is pretty remarkable, and so to be able to win 3 majors and 3 different majors, that tells you a lot about his game. You know, each of those major championships are hard fought and won, but they're all in different conditions, different necessities for your game. It was funny, they had a press conference today with Phil Mickelson and Ernie Els together. They're both playing in their 100th major. And they were talking about the difficulty of trying to win the 4 different majors, even 3 different majors, Phil said, was something, you know, he never thought he'd even be able to do. He never thought he'd win the British Open. So it's probably underrated right now. I think even this week, it doesn't feel like there's a huge buzz. There's obviously some buzz, and we might get it tomorrow when he comes into the press room, but there's a lot of people talking about Rory. There's a lot of people talking about Dustin Johnson here this week. And it just seems like Jordan Spieth isn't getting ready the props that he deserves. By his own admission, after he won the Open, says, look, it's way too early to start talking about any kind of legacy or history or where I am. But if you're comparing guys when they're 23 and 24, boy, it's hard not to like what he's done.
Yeah, well, Bob, you look at Rory McIlroy's record at Quail Hollow, where he's won twice. I mean, obviously, I think that's the big reason why people are making him, if not the favorite, then maybe the second favorite to Spieth. Do you think that plays into this, or is it going to be a different course than we've seen on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, it's gone through a few changes since it's sort of hosted this Quail Hollow, and it is a PGA Tour course, though, still. I mean, guys know this course, which is not all that usual for a major championship. And I think probably the other aspect is that it is known as a bomber's course, and Jordan Spieth is not a bomber. I mean, he wins tournaments with his golf IQ. He's just so smart and so resilient, and we saw that a little bit at the British Open with that miracle at the 13th hole. So I think maybe that's taking some of the steam out of his sails, but as I say, he'll be in the press conference tomorrow, so I imagine there'll be a lot of stories, a lot of attention focused on him. I saw him out in the golf course today, wearing shorts, by the way, which is weird. The guys are allowed to wear shorts here this week in the practice rounds. And he says he's just trying to keep the noise down. He's trying to quiet the noise and focus on this as another tournament, another major, and another chance to play some good golf. So we'll see if he's able to do that.
Good stuff, Bob. Always enjoy it. I'm sure we'll catch up later this week.
Okay, take care, guys. Always good to talk.
You bet. Bob Weeks, TSN Golf Analyst and our Golf Insider, is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Test drive the superior performance of a Subaru today. Coming up in hour number three of Overdrive, we'll catch up with the TV. TSN 2 will join us. Brady Quinn will be along. We'll talk Jay Cutler in Miami. Cutler, not particularly concerned with his cardiovascular output at this juncture. After all, he is just a quarterback. But it will be fascinating because we love to create narratives and storylines to see Cutler. Is there a more maligned quarterback related to expectation of this generation than Jay Cutler? Because I'm going somewhere with this. Tom Brady's the best ever,
yes,
or arguably the best ever. And so the arguable best ever is going to go against arguably the most maligned of the same generation here.
Well, who else has had their actual desire to play, their commitment to their profession question like Jay Cutler? I can't think of anyone.
Like, Tom Brady won't eat a popsicle.
Yeah.
Because he thinks his body will break down. Jay Cutler don't care if he can't breathe after he runs.
And he's given so many indications that he could care less about his fate on the football field that you have to start believing that he doesn't really care that much.
Is he the king of bad body language in pro sports?
Oh.
See, I always go back. You know who I'm talking about, Dave. I'm always worried about if we got a younger listener who has no idea who Jeff George is.
Mm-hmm.
But Jeff George was he the first overall pick of the Indianapolis Colts, if you go way back? But he played for Oakland and he played for Atlanta. Probably had another stop or two. And Jeff George in the, I want to say late 80s, but certainly the early to mid 90s, was absolutely the guy who never performed to his draft position and had the worst body language of any quarterback. It still stands out to me 25 years later. I think Cutler's got to be the king of bad body language of this generation.
And he was number one overall, Scotty. Your memory did serve you correctly in the 1990 NFL draft. Jeff George.
All right. Well, we'll get into that with Brady Quinn. Have some fun. Go down a few other tracks as well. Colin Kaepernick is still looking for work. And a bunch of else, that's not a sentence, but a bunch of other things, there we go, to touch on. Barry Bonds, 10 years ago yesterday, hit home run number 756 to beat Hank Aaron's record. Sidney Crosby, 8787, turned 30 yesterday. We'll reflect on that. A bunch of other things to come. Stay with us. Overdrive, TSN 1050 and the TSN Go app. Barry Bonds, 10 years ago last night, setting Major League Baseball's home run mark, surpassing Hank Aaron with his 756th home run. And Dave, I mean, it was 10 years ago, which first of all is stunning. But secondly, is there a less celebrated record in pro sports? I don't think we've heard a word about this since, and it was really only talked about in San Francisco last night. Nobody wants to acknowledge this truth.
It's amazing how people still love Bonds in San Fran. Like, he's trotted out.
He's a god there.
He's a god there, and he's a pariah everywhere else. And, you know, we all remember, even peripheral baseball fans know 755, right? They know the Hank Aaron number. They knew 714 was Babe Ruth's number. But I don't think many people care or know that Barry Bonds finished up with 762, right? After he broke that record, it was like, oh, yeah, whatever, Barry. Like, you know, the commissioner wasn't there to herald it. There was a ton of divisive coverage, I would say, leaning toward negative coverage of the event, pointing out that it was a stain on baseball history and not something to be celebrated. And 10 years later, I don't think people feel much different about it.
Right, and this is a guy who in 2007, at 42 years old, had an on-base percentage of .480. He was still getting walked left, right, and center, and he was out of the game after that year.
An OPS of 1,000-plus at age 42.
Unbelievable. 10 years ago, last night. Brady Quinn joins us next. Overdrive, TSN 1050.